Hey, Rebels. My name is Matthew Barton. Welcome to the Rebellion Brewing Podcast. Today, I'm sitting down with Jen Sharp. She's telling stories all about Saskatchewan food. And I think food is the perfect jumping-off point for coming together as humans. In these politically charged times, during the middle of a plague, it's hard. It's harder to find reasons to come together. I think one of the best ways to find common ground is with good food and a tasty pint. Sharp's also the author of Flat Out Delicious and the creative force behind Flat Out Food, a new docuseries featuring Sasky folks making great food and drink, including our very own lentil beer. And it begins airing February 24th on CityTV, which will be available also for streaming online after it airs. I'm going to include links in the show notes so you can find it after the show. So let's get into it. Jen, welcome to the show.
Well, hi, Matthew. Thank you for having me.
How's it going?
Well, the day we are talking, it's in the middle of this polar vortex in Saskatchewan. So it's minus 35, minus 40, maybe a bit colder. But you know what? I still love Saskatchewan. Still grateful to be here and finding ways to, like you said, connect over food and good stories.
I was feeling a little bit weak. I wore long johns to the office today. I was like, I'm tough. I'm from Saskatchewan. I can take this. And I'm like, no, I can't. I need layers today.
So I actually went and stood out in the snow barefoot this morning, just saying hello to the world and a little wake up and feel alive call.
Do you still have all your toes?
Yes, but I didn't stay out very long.
What is it they say at minus 35? It's 30 seconds until you get frostbite or something?
Yeah, something like that. So I've made it like 30 seconds probably.
So for people who don't know, what is your background?
So I grew up in Saskatchewan, Matthew. I was born on a farm near Craig, right in kind of the middle between Saskatoon and Regina, and then spent most of my formative years in Saskatoon and had the opportunity to study abroad and live abroad quite a lot, but have always felt this pull, this draw back to Saskatchewan. And I truly love this province. I worked at the Star Phoenix in Saskatoon as a journalist for several years and the Leader Post in Regina. I took care of QC, which is an urban weekly magazine that I believe is still in publication, I hope, in Regina, and its sister publication in Saskatoon, which was called Bridges. And then I took off for a few years and I went training horses in Spain and had a heck of an adventure. And then I came home and got this deal to write Flat Out Delicious. And in 2018, my friend and photographer Richard Marjan and I spent months traveling all over this province to find some of the best stories and some of our finest food artisans. So that is everyone from chefs and farmers and beekeepers and bakers to Rebellion's own Mark Heisey, and learning about the stories behind our food and traditions and agriculture. And so now that we have, well, we as in myself and Adrian Halter of Halter Media in Regina, we've turned that into a docuseries and it's called Flat Out Food. So it's like this beautiful evolution that's happened in Saskatchewan.
I remember when the book first launched, we have a few at the brewery for sale, and it seemed to be very well warmly received. You know, it's easy for people to criticize a thing when it comes out and they don't necessarily understand all the work behind it. But when people saw this and you said, here's what this is about, everybody, at least to me, was universally like, yeah, it's about time.
Yeah, well, you know, I think it was about time. And this is actually the very first episode of the docuseries. This comes up in the dinner scene too, that I really feel, and many of us feel, that we've been humble for too long in Saskatchewan. Like, we've got some awesome things going on, which you know about through all the fascinating people you get to talk to in this podcast. And when the book came out, And I had the, I'm sure it's normal, trepidations of what people might say or think. And I obviously could not include everyone in the book. And there could have been much more than the 167 stories, which is a lot, right? But at the same time, I also knew I needed to distance myself and not let other people's thoughts and opinions control me, because then I'm living in a prison. And so, you know, you just got to distance yourself from it and know what you're putting out there is worthy and worth it. And of course it was, because it's not my stories, it's Saskatchewan's. It's all these beautiful stories about what goes into our communities and our food systems. And I think it was well received, because it's stories that we can all relate to and care about.
When you look back on the book and the show, is there a particular story that stood out to you as something you'll never forget?
You know, I think it's the episode in the show, and also the day that we spent with the chefs when we were doing the book research, foraging for chanterelle mushrooms in northern Saskatchewan in the boreal forest. And I had heard about them. I'd written about food for several years, as I told you, with the newspapers. And I tasted them, but I had never found them in the forest and tasted a fresh wild chanterelle picked straight from the forest floor with, you know, little bits of dirt and maybe some moss on it. I'd never done that before, and I didn't know how to forage for them. And so when we did the book research, two Saskatoon chefs, they own Hearth Restaurant, Thane Robstad and Beth Rogers, they took us foraging. And it was just like a scene from a movie. And I was like a little kid on Christmas morning. And then we got to relive the whole thing again this last summer in 2020, doing the docuseries and filming. We spent 12 hours in that forest with those two chefs and also Christy Peters from Primal Restaurant in Saskatoon. And by the end of the day, I was just crawling around on the forest floor eating these little mushrooms, and I was so happy. And it's like, it's pure magic, these little forest jewels, and they are right in our backyard. They are coveted by chefs all over the world, and they grow wild and beautifully in Saskatchewan.
What makes a chanterelle mushroom so special?
So there's a few things that make Saskatchewan chanterelles special, and I've been learning this over the past few years. They grow in other parts of Canada, not just Saskatchewan, but there's something about the unique climate and the soil, our trees, terroir is the French word, and I always mispronounce it, but what goes into the Saskatchewan chanterelles makes them very densely flavored. Like this punch that hits you when you eat it. It's this peppery, it smells like an apricot, but it tastes peppery on the tongue. And once you cook it, the taste changes. And once they've been refrigerated, the taste changes as well. And they're still incredible, but right from the forest floor, nothing else tastes like it. And so the Saskatchewan ones are actually quite small compared to ones that say in BC. The BC ones are quite a bit larger, and they tend to have more water in them, so the flavor isn't as concentrated. But these Saskatchewan wild chanterelles are tiny and bright orange color and just this flavor burst. So it's, it's quite cool.
I was super lucky. I got to have some shaved chanterelles on top of like this oatmeal porridge dish. And my wife, she's allergic to mushrooms. So it was kind of like, I'll just take that. And I got to have her course too.
Attaboy.
The chef, he looked at me. He saw me take her serving. He's like, hey, that's not fair. And I'm like, no, it's okay.
She's like, mushrooms. I'll take care of that. That's awesome.
I know that the act of writing can sometimes be a solitary act. At least it is for me when I'm sitting down at the keyboard. But it sounds like yours was a much more collaborative exercise in journalism, and you're just reaching out to multiple people rather than just living inside your own head. Is that accurate?
Yeah, in many ways, yes. I mean, going out and getting these stories for Flat Out Delicious was 100%. Really the best stories I find come when I take myself completely out of the interview, out of the occasion, and let the energy of what that person is saying start flowing through me and really feel, connect with them and the importance of what they're telling me. And now this isn't the case for everyone, of course, and it wasn't the case for everyone in the book, but I will say the majority of those stories, I got on like that farmer's field or stood in that rancher's pasture looking at his cattle and started hearing him tell me why he uses rotational grazing to build soil health or why he's using intercropping to grow his lentils. And he or she just so passionate and devoted to these methods of growing food, or the chefs that are creating these meals from scratch using locally sourced ingredients and intentional love going into every dish. And it's like, wow, this story is so much bigger than me. And then my job is really as a conduit to put this into a condensed little 250 or 300 word profile for the book that readers can hopefully get enough information that they need to find this person, to want to visit this person and eat their food, and also to feel a little bit of that energy that I was feeling. So there's a famous saying about writing. I think it was Mark Twain. He said, I didn't have time to write short, so I wrote long, because writing short is incredibly difficult. So when it came time to write the manuscript, which was tens of thousands of words long, of course, and being out on the road was so much fun. Like, I was road tripping with one of my best friends and we were camping on the road and visiting all these cool places. And then it was winter and it was time to write the manuscript alone in my condo in Saskatoon. I said, okay, this is not so much fun anymore. It was actually very difficult. And the day I finished was one of the happiest days of my life.
In my background, I've also gotten experience with print, but with TV, I've found that technology often tends to get in the way when I'm trying to interview people. I feel like it's a less natural flowing experience. When people have the camera on them, it feels like just the very act of being, of observing them with a lens or mediated through technology kind of destroys the magic that I could find when I was doing print work, when I was just a writer. How do you capture that in the docuseries? How do you get back to that place? I'm just making a vast assumption here that technology screws you up too, just like it does me, but if yes, then how do you get the magic?
That is such a great point that you very eloquently put into words, and it was something that I grappled with quite a bit shooting the docuseries, because as you say, a print background, I was very low tech as a journalist. I maybe would have my phone and take a snap a photo here and then, but I didn't do anything. Like, I had my little recorder and I would just like put it down and just like forget about it and bring that person in to feel that energy of the story. So it was no tech. And I found that, you know, as the more you get talking, people open up. And yes, you get these authentic, impactful stories. Now, exactly what you said, you stick a camera in front of somebody's face, especially someone that has never been on camera. Yes. Matthew's making a very funny, like, tense face. Yeah, that's exactly what happens. And for me too, I did not have much experience interviewing people behind the camera either. But you know what? I just use the exact same kind of idea as I would in a print story. And that is just let all this technology fall away. It's just you and me. I care about this story. I truly do. I want to hear everything about it. You're just talking to me. And I found a lot of people were a bit tense at the beginning just because there's so much equipment and everything else. And then it starts to fall away and that authenticity comes out. And also so blessed to have the crew that we did, that Adrian Halter assembled, and a lot of like friends and industry people that were absolutely phenomenal at what they do and just very gentle and soft and accepting. There wasn't any like yelling or rushing or none of that. It was just this really great atmosphere that I think made people feel very comfortable and open to share their stories.
Was it a Saskatchewan film crew?
It was. We are very proud of that. Everyone except for one person is from or living in Saskatchewan in both our production and post-production crew. And that was not easy to put together. As you probably know, what has happened to our film industry in this province, but it was important to us. So, and we got really lucky too. A few of our crew members had been living abroad or elsewhere, not in Canada, and had managed to come home or had made it home because of the virus, and it all worked out in our favor. So we got some incredible talent and very grateful for that.
Maybe you can confirm this, but I've heard that Saskatchewan's film community, the people who are producing TV shows and docuseries like this, they're low drama. They don't screw around. There's no ego. They just are great at what they do. This is what I've heard and been told repeatedly.
Well, I'm so new to this. That is what it seemed like to me, just getting my foot in the door with all of it. But yeah, like everyone that I've worked with this past year, of course, Adrian Halter included, collaborative, low drama, like support one another, because there's so few of us or so few of them. I think we got to take care of each other. And, you know, our culinary industry is a lot like that too. I found in Regina, Saskatoon, in rural centers. I think it's honestly the Saskatchewan spirit.
The idea I've been kicking around in my head is we forgot who we were, and food and beer allows us to come together and kind of remind ourselves of our values. And I haven't really fully formed this idea. It could be a total turd on arrival, but I just can't stop thinking about how when I get to go out to the farmer's field and talk to him about his barley, or when I go out to talk to Justin at JGL Farms and smell the hops in the wind, you know, it's a chance to remember who we are and what we truly value and what makes life better. And I kind of wanted to bug you and say, when you're sitting down in the editing suite and you're getting to pull all these video clips together to these people, was it an act of finding values or expressing values that you maybe had in yourself? Was it hard to share ideas, or did it just flow and you're like, this is my Saskatchewan?
Oh, I love this idea. And I've been toying with this too this past year. I feel like 2020 really showed us all what we're made of and what's important to us. And it was this grand coming back home. And I'm sure you noticed the uptick in people wanting locally sourced food and caring more about craft beer and supporting local, all these things, which to me is the most incredible silver lining out of all of this. So when it comes to the docuseries, we both, Adrian and I and myself are producing it, we said from the get-go, we had ideas of the stories that we wanted to tell and formats for each episode and the ingredients and tracing it. But we also wanted to be very open to how the story might evolve and where the story might take us. And it took us on some incredible, unexpected journeys that feel even more poignant now, putting this all together in the end of 2020, beginning of 2021, and seeing how these stories can help shape what Saskatchewan is all about. And so I'll give you one example of this that always sticks in my mind because it's incredibly powerful. And it's from the community of Shaunavon, which is in southwest Saskatchewan. And there's one of the province's, if not Western Canada's, best restaurant in that town. And it is called Harvest Eatery. If you haven't been there, please go. It is worth the road trip. But the other story in that town is the butcher shop right across the street from the restaurant. And this is where the restaurant owners get their beef and some of their other meats from. And so the owner of the butcher shop is a cattle rancher, and he lives about 20 miles out of town. Him and his family have raised cattle for generations. And I don't remember how many years ago it was, they opened the butcher shop in town. And just last year, they opened a slaughtering facility as well. So now these cattle ranchers have complete control over their supply chain. They know exactly how those cattle are raised. They know what they're being fed from calf to plate, if you will. They are controlling. They're knowing how their end of life is happening, that they're given respect. There's no feedlot operation. It's to the slaughterhouse, to the butcher shop, and the supply chain is very, very small, like maybe 30 miles. And their customers have come to rely and depend on that. They know that's where they can get really good quality beef. They know who raised it. They know where it came from. And the coolest part about all this is that when the grocery stores had like some problems with keeping meat and food on the shelves, the global supply chain broke down, and we saw the slaughter plants in Alberta, which is where 95% of Canada's cattle are processed, which is a little ridiculous, but that's a topic for another day. So those shut down because of the COVID outbreaks, right? And so then there's a beef shortage and the prices went up. Ranchers were getting paid less for beef. Grocery stores were charging more, but the middlemen were the ones making the money. The grocery stores weren't making more because they had to pay more to get that processed beef. Now, at Ranch House Meats in Shaunavon, he did not raise his prices a cent because, and these are his words, "I'm not here to gouge people. I'm here to feed my community." And honestly, when we get to the roots of it, Matthew, exactly what you were saying, this is what farmers' jobs have always been, to feed their community, to take care of their community. And that's this other story that came out in the beef episode of Flat Out Food, of how one rancher is doing exactly that.
You just put chills up my spine.
Woo!
It's like, you get to tell me a story that reminds me, this is who Saskatchewan is. This is what makes us who we are. When a farmer says, "I can take care of my people in a time of crisis, I'm not going to exploit them to the bone. I'm going to make sure they have food on their table. I'm going to give them the dignity they deserve." That's Saskatchewan to me.
You just put a chill on my spine now. That, yes, that is exactly what it is. And that is what we're coming home to. I truly feel that in my heart. This docuseries, my book, it's all just small ways that help remind people what we're capable of, who we are, how we take care of each other in times of crisis, what's available here. And it's all tied back to that spirit, yeah, of who we are.
I also too have a Harvest Eatery story, if you would permit me.
I would love to hear it.
So I have not yet been to the restaurant proper, but a whole bunch of our staff has been. And my wife and I actually had plans this summer. And we said, we're going, we're going to make a whole evening of it. We're going to leave the kids with grandma and grandpa. We're going to book a hotel room, do the whole thing, hang out with Garrett and his wife. And it just never happened. But the first time I met Garrett, it was actually at the Rebellion Tap Room. And a tick had burrowed into his neck. And it was gross. And his wife was like, "Oh, this is sick. I can't touch this. It was just too close to her, right?" And so I helped him get this tick out of the back of his neck. And it was just like, "Here you go, buddy." Just fist bump. And we just sat down and had beers. I didn't know he was Garrett from Harvest Eatery at the time. We were just having a beer and hanging out. And I found them to be such lovely, charming people. And then when I was like, "Wait, you're the guy that does the food in Shaunavon? You're awesome." And he's like, "Oh, you've heard of me?" And I'm like, "Of course I've heard of you." It was just this real, no egos, no pretentiousness, just a really fun interaction. And then the next time they came in, he's like, "I'm okay, no ticks this time."
That totally sounds like him too. Oh man, that's good.
That's my Garrett story.
That's awesome.
If there's one thing people need to know before they check out this docuseries, what should they know?
I would like them to know, or I would like them to think about, rather, having an open mind. Have an open mind and be open to what you might discover in this docuseries and the different stories and the things that you might not have even have thought are possible. And I would like them to know that eating locally, drinking locally made craft beer, buying locally made artisanal products is not as unreachable or unattainable or unaffordable as some may have made it out to be. And let's just think about the marketing messages out there that are telling us to consume, consume, consume with really low quality products and food and beverages overall that are imported from other places and are not true to our home. And if we can look at things from a little more of a quantity over quality mindset and invest in some really beautiful craft beer like your lentil cream ale, then we're all the better for it, I think. So I hope this show inspires a little of that.
I find it wild that you just brought that idea up, because literally last night, Mark and I are sitting there and I was complaining because there's this podcast series about food, and it was talking about how science had been misused, and they were doing these longitudinal studies with people to say, how can we make food not only more addictive, but how far can we push food and ingredients to not resemble food to make more profit? So it's like there's less nutrition, less actual real food present in the product, in the final end thing. How far can we take it away from being actual food before the consumer says, I refuse to eat that, or I refuse to pay for it, just to make a buck? And then Mark looks at me and he goes, that's what the big guys did with beer. He's like, it's the guys like us who are taking it back to barley, yeast, hops, and water and not screwing around. He's like, we're taking it back to the real thing. So I like that you kind of are already in that same mindset.
Oh, I love how you said that too. This idea of food as a commodity, which it is, but it's entered our psyches as well, that food is something that is meant to be fast, convenient. It can taste okay. It doesn't really matter. Huge portions, and it doesn't really matter where it came from as long as it fills us up. And this has been perpetuated since after World War II, really, with the advent of convenience foods, fast foods, microwaves, and it was really pushed as this luxury item. You know, you spend less time in the kitchen, pop in this microwave dinner, and then it's gone through and through till now. I mean, you go in any grocery store and you walk down any aisle, pick up a bag of whatever, it's not food anymore. It is hyper processed. You can't pronounce half the ingredients. Our bodies don't know how to process that. Our bodies are like, what are you feeding me? And like once in a while, it's okay, it's tasty, but you eat that over time and you look at the oxidative stress that causes and the very high rates of chronic disease that we have in North America. A lot of that is related to our food and to these major food companies that you talked about that have marketing budgets in the billions of dollars that push it on us all the time. Like, oh, it's got vitamin D added, but it's actually terrible food, and we're giving that to our kids or whatever it might be, right? And Mark is so on the money about the big beer companies too, because it's right. And you could talk about it with wine too. I mean, it's some of the more popular wines are basically like drinking sugar, right? And it's like, okay, what? We've gone a little bit awry here. But the cool thing about it, it's very easy to take back your sovereignty and to reclaim your own food future and your drinks as well. And all you have to do is just start looking in your own backyard, because Saskatchewan is full of people that are bucking this big food commodity trend and are coming back home to basics.
It feels like we've come full circle in this conversation where your books and your docuseries get to kind of break that cycle. You get to say, here's some really good things. Remember who you are. And it's through food and drink. And it's real. It's not this manufactured processed garbage. It's authentic and true and better for you.
Oh, you just said that so beautifully. Yeah. Remember who you are. And I think another thing that 2020 has shown us is how disconnected a lot of us were, and how a lot of us turned back to basics, spending time with our family, baking bread, cooking at home, spending more time in nature. taking time to enjoy a meal with friends over Zoom or in a favorite restaurant with a small group or at home, whatever it might be, we realized how busy, I hate that word, busy we were, and how stressed we were, and we were running around like chickens with our heads cut off. What were we achieving? And now it's like, okay, we've had almost a year now to really think about it and reevaluate. And I hope really to, yeah, come back home to what matters and what nourishes us, what truly nourishes us.
Well, Jen, I want to thank you for your contribution to Saskatchewan culture, especially with food and drink.
Oh, thank you. That's very kind of you.
I'm going to include links in the show notes, so everybody who finds us online can check out the show when it airs and can find your book and find the blog. Is there anything I'm missing that people should check out?
Well, we have to tell people to make sure to watch the second episode on March 3rd, and it will also stream online and live online if you miss that date, because that is the episode that features Mark and Rebellion Brewing and your lentil cream ale. And we dive into the story behind it, how the lentils are grown, what we're doing with lentils in Saskatchewan, and about this beer that has put Saskatchewan on a global craft brewery map, if I may say so. So it's an awesome episode. I can't say enough good things about it. And yeah, make sure you watch that.
Jen, thanks for your time.
Thank you so much, Matthew.
Rebels, thanks for listening today. If you have any questions or comments about this episode, be sure to join us on our brand new Facebook group page, The Rebellion Brewing Podcast. I'm also proud to let you know that we're members of the Saskatchewan Podcast Network. It's a one-stop shop for tons of locally produced stories from across our province. You can find them at thesaskpodcastnetwork.com. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Untappd, as well as TikTok, so you don't miss out on the latest in Sask craft beer. Thank you for joining the Rebellion.